Hello, it's Kathy Love here. I'm a business coach who helps allied health professionals run powerful and profitable businesses in the disability sector. It's my pleasure to share up more private practice stories and wisdom in this, our third season. My guests are generous, creative, and honest. It has been such a joy to be able to hold these conversations and capture these moments for your listening pleasure. We're sure that you'll really enjoy these unplugged chats and these private practice heart-to-hearts. So settle in, let's get the conversation started. Hello, everybody. And this is a podcast that is probably starting in shrieks of laughter. Joe and I were so carried away that we sort of almost forgot to hit record. It is my pleasure to welcome to the microphone of life, Joe Muirhead, the founding director of The Purple Co. Joe, I've never told you what an awesome company name that is. And your tagline, high five, is absolutely sensational. The Purpose for People company. Say hello, introduce yourself. What does The Purple Co. do?
Thank you, Kathy. And we'll just warn everybody that we are probably going to talk over the top of one another, use lots of words and go really fast because that's what we tend to do. So Purple Co., we help people return to work following injury, illness and trauma. They didn't want us to be pigeonholed as every other work cover approved rehabilitation provider on the market. We don't actually serve any work cover insurance companies. I built Purple Co. to meet a need in the life insurance sector. In New South Wales, we do a lot of work in with lifetime care and support recipients. So they're motor accident vehicle survivors who have lifetime care and support needs. And we do a lot of work privately and some CTP work up here as well. So I was really frustrated. I'd been working in occupational rehabilitation since graduation, which was in 1994. Yes, I've been around
a while.
I'm
older than you. Just keep.
Yeah. Okay. And I there had to be a different way that we were helping people return to work. I got frustrated that clinicians were doing this churn and burn thing where an experienced clinician ended up being 18 months in practice and then they left the industry, and I thought that was horrid, that it was all about the pursuit of these regulatory authorities, but then it was the disconnect between what the insurance companies were paid to do and what the legislation said. And anyway, I got sick of it. So I thought there's got to be a different way. So I created Purple Co. because I really wanted to put the reconnect back to purpose and people. So when people are connected to a sense of purpose, we make work work and we make it work well. So work is incredibly important. And it doesn't need to be work that we get paid money for, but a sense of work, of contribution. We know the research has been going on for as long as, you know, I've been alive, that people who are gainfully employed in some type of work have better health than people who aren't. And it's not the unemployment causing the ill health, it's the lack of work, the lack of purpose. And it's not just mental health. It's actually bigger than just mental health. So Purple Co. is about sort of disrupting an industry that's very risk adverse, that's very systems driven, and putting the people back in it. That's not to say that we don't need to manage risk and put systems in place, but my priority is very much about reconnecting people to work. So that's how Purple Co. was born.
Very, very cool. And who is in your business family? Have you got a cast of thousands, or have you got a solid frontline set of troopers? What does it look like?
I'm a solid frontline set of troopers. So this business was never supposed to get any bigger than me, except after, I know, within six weeks of starting, I had more work than I could handle. So there's eight clinicians on my team. They're all subcontractors. I've had some of them with me for 8 years, where everybody's experienced. They all choose to do this work. We have a fantastic team culture here, which is all about respect and dignity. So making sure that we're respected, that our clients are respected, and that the work we do is respected, because I don't see enough of that happening. Soapbox. I have an accounts person. I haven't quite defined her role because it's in growth at the moment, but she basically helps me manage accounts because we don't want me doing that because that's details.
That's not going to end well.
No. I have a full-time practice manager, the awesome Sophie. So she's the only other employee in the business. And then I've got your usual, you know, I have a lawyer and a broker and an accountant and a graphic designer and those kinds of people as well. I don't think you can do this at all without having other people in your world. It's just impossible.
Absolutely. And your in-house team and your external team as well. And ideally they all kind of know each other as well. So, you know, your end of year do is quite a tribe. I think that's the way to go. Way to go.
Yeah. No, I really like it. It served us well. It serves everyone else well. We've had people go and have babies. We've had people go on extended leave. We've had other people go and have babies. There's a theme. But it kind of allows for the flexibility without it being really demanding on the financial resources in the business. So, and that's what I wanted. I don't want to be trapped to paying salaries. I just don't.
Yeah. Where have the speed bumps been in the business adventure?
Oh, the biggest speed bump in my business adventure is me. I'll say that with all vulnerability. So I've had to learn, I'm an exceptional clinician. Like, I'm really good at what I do. I came from a family of a small business and I watched my family, we lived on the edge of bankruptcy my entire life. So that's what I thought small business meant. I was never going to do my own business because it meant that you had a heart attack at 37 because that's what I experienced in my family. And it also meant that there was never enough money. So that was kind of alarming when I actually started my own practice, made a heck of a lot more money, started wealth creation and was working with a caseload that I loved, doing the work the way I loved to do it and being able to bring people into my team. It was like, that's not supposed to happen. So there was this whole mystification. Yeah. I was totally mystified by the
terror
success.
Of success. The terror.
Yeah. I changed my business model about 2.5 years ago. So I was the biggest income earner. It was all about the billable hours. It was all about me doing the work. And that's really profitable. So, you know, we're running on about 40% profitability, but I was exhausted. Because of the experience I've gotten, the way I've been taught to do this work, I do a lot of work that's medico-legal based, a lot of work with highly complex situations like CEO, major depression, cardiovascular disease, who is being managed out of a business, that's the type of referral I get. 45-year-old non-English speaking forklift operator with a sore back, not so much. So I was getting really tired and I didn't plan for the change as well as I could have. So building my team up, I just assumed that the revenue would continue, which it does, but my expenses increased.
Like, they talk about
build
team, and then it doesn't always plateau. There can be a little bit of a dip, and there's a whole lot more admin. Who knew that?
Oh, admin, infrastructure, management, maintenance, just helping people deal with things like complaints, referral handling. And I'm not a systematized thinker. I don't think in terms of systems.
Are you really? Oh, man.
Yeah. It's one of my, that would be a big speed bump. So we have, I'm awesome at starting things. I'm really crap at finishing them.
Oh, that entrepreneurial spirit.
Yeah. So as you get more and more people involved, if you don't have clear systems and procedures, then it all falls over and you end up micromanaging and then that just, So my current practice manager, Sophie, she's been with me for 12 months and every time we do something, she writes it out and sends it to everyone. The person who doesn't follow the systems in this business is me.
Rules don't apply, hey? Well, I'm loving Sophie.
Oh, yes, it's mine. I'm loving Sophie.
Her real name's not Sophie.
No, that's right. No, it's not. You cannot find her anywhere. She's a figment of your imagination. No, she's been an incredible asset to this business, incredible asset to me. And I was very good at recruiting people like me.
Oh, the clone theory. How did that go? I know how it went for me. No.
Yeah, no, it's not what the business needed. So I then engaged a recruitment company to help me find Sophie because I needed to distance myself from that. I fall in love with potential so quickly. I fall in love with gregarious people who want to love and serve me and are passionate about life. What I needed was somebody who is steady, who is systematic, who doesn't get easily flustered. And I'm not necessarily going to draw that out of somebody, and I'm not going in an interview situation. So yes, I had to suck it up and go, wow, that's a lot of money to spend on recruitment, but it was the best investment because I only interviewed two people. Both of them were exceptional candidates, which freed me up for my opportunity cost, which meant I kept doing the work that I do.
Yeah.
So,
and got out of your own way.
Yeah, getting out of my own way. Yes.
In that recruitment process, we knew that we wouldn't really stay on track in this chat. In that recruitment process, did you do or did the recruitment agency do the DISC or profiling stuff?
Yeah, yeah. I use extended DISC, which is like DISC but on steroids. Yeah. And that's, I use that with my coaching clients, my mentoring clients. Some of my exec clients don't use it with everyone because it depends on your illness. You can skew your result. They tell you it can't, but I'm here to tell you it does. But I found it incredibly useful. What we had done was I have my profile. So we knew where my skill gap or my behavioral gaps were, so we could recruit to that, but then we also profiled the job so we could see the person fit. None of those tools are ever going to be 100% perfect. Correct. But it was a useful validation for me because it wasn't going to be a natural fit for me, if that makes sense, like based on just personality. So I wanted to do this better than I had done in the past. And also because as far as I was concerned, the business was a mess and I needed somebody to come in and clean it up. And it, you can't just say to a person, please come in and clean up my business, because they need a little bit more instruction than that.
Yeah, just a little bit of a hint. Where's the key to the filing cabinet? What's your password?
Been in the bathroom. I'd missed that.
Oh, gosh. There's so much learning. How have you picked up your business nous along the years? Where's all that good stuff come from?
I've invested. When I decided to take this business seriously, so the first 12 months I was doing this, it was never going to be the thing I did. It was only going to be the thing that put food on the table until I worked out what I was going to do. I burnt out several times, thought that the problem was with me, thought that the problem was health and I needed to do something different. So I tried to learn how to trade the US stock market, and apparently a trained monkey can do that, but Joe can't. So I gifted the US economy my life savings. That's how the business started. So once I decided to take it seriously, I didn't so much go and get advice on how to do the business stuff, because I figure more money needs to go in than goes out, come in than goes out. So for me, that was business fundamentals 101. Was terrified of social. So this was 8 years ago, no website, no social, terrified of it. So I decided I would just ignore that. But I did invest in coaching training. Coaching and training. So I went to a school in Melbourne where I did some coaching training and was also coached by a business coach. And that person helped me achieve my first $12,000 revenue month, which at the time was
massive.
And that was me and one other clinician. So yeah, we were working freaking hard, but I did that for 12 months and I learned a little bit more about how to think like a business owner. But the disconnect there was health is unique, and every industry is going to tell you that they're unique. But we have some unique limitations on us in the way that we build a business, and especially with the marketing game, because it's just stuff we can't do. So client testimonials and how we talk about clients online and blah, 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 blah.
There's just reviews and endorsements.
So I was then being encouraged to do stuff that was unethical, so I backed away. back, just had to back away. But I've actually been engaged with some type of coach or mentor since 2008.
Yeah, same.
So, yeah. So
maybe before then.
Yeah. That's for me, it's about the perspective that person gives me. And I haven't always had the same person, but I don't shop around. It's about, well, what is my next development stage, and is the person I'm working with now the right person to help me move on to there? Usually what happens is the person I'm working with realizes that we're getting to the end of what they can offer and will help me transition, and which is what I love to do with my clients as well. It's like, yeah, you're ready for something different or someone different, or you need different knowledge base. So that, I don't know how people think that they can get through this without getting that perspective.
Oh, I have no idea.
To the converted.
Just sagged in my chair. Continue. I mean, how do you know? How do you even identify or start to work towards what you don't know?
You don't know what you don't know. And the thing that we spend 4 or 5 years at university to become credentialed, right?
Yep.
Some of us listening are going to have spent 6 years. You have spent hundreds, well, probably in the US, it's hundreds of thousands of dollars, but we've spent a big chunk of money. Like, we have spent a house deposit on getting educated. We have spent 5 or 6 years getting educated. We have no problem investing time, energy, or money in getting our CPD up and running, making sure that we're on top of our clinical game. Yet for some bizarre reason, health professionals think that we should learn how to run a business by osmosis.
Or not even osmosis, that it's a place of sitting and feeling inadequate year after year. And that for some reason that part of their self and that part of their lifestyle and the way they serve their community and family doesn't deserve love and investment.
Wow, that's a much nicer way to say it. Thank you.
Glad we're recording this. So we should record a lot of our conversations.
It saddens me so much. I have consults with people to see if we're a good fit or if I can help. And I would speak to somebody probably once a week who is totally burnt out and probably on the verge of, you know, a depressive episode because they haven't managed or asked for help around how do I do this business stuff and do this clinical work. And, yep, great, we can help you recover from burnout, but, geez, it's so unnecessary because we have so many health professionals leaving the profession.
Yeah.
So then we've got a health system here in Australia that's in crisis because Medicare is awesome, but it was never designed to deal with the chronicity of health issues that we've got, right? So we all know that people are living longer. They've got poorer health as we live longer, that the chronicity of disease is what is disabling us these days. People don't die from a cancer diagnosis anymore. They are living post-cancer. Right. And there's stuff that goes on with that. So if we've got if we have a whole entire health system, whether it's public or private, full of people 3 years max, man, we are doing this country and our communities a complete disservice. I had this conversation when I first started, and I remember I had an OT in my life then who was 20 years ago. And I just went, I can't wait to be a 20-year veteran. And my boss went, oh, nobody stays that long in the industry anymore.
Wow. Yeah.
And it just saddens me.
And I guess you throw in the load of running a business as well. We both know that the clients that we serve and our colleagues, they work hard. It's a relentless gig. And the whole shift from working harder to smarter can't happen overnight because there's so many bits of the puzzle that need to kind of be literally thrown up and discussed and evaluated and then drop down into their right spot. So there sometimes is a bit of a little bit of wishful thinking, and we all love a bit of that,
yes,
you know, 6 months and it will be fixed. It may not be. It may be 6 months and you're starting to see the daylight. And so it's a long haul. Business is it's a puppy, you know, it's for life.
And we need to stop wanting the immediate success that we think everybody is having, because they're really not. Like it's rare that anyone is an overnight success. An overnight success will take you 8 years or 5 years. We have some people in the world who can do it quicker than that, and that's awesome. Please teach me how. But it's not sustainable. And unfortunately, I have now had to rehabilitate some very influential senior people, women here in Australia, who had it all very quickly and totally decompensated. And it's a privilege to be able to work with people when they're that vulnerable. But the thing that they've all said is, I wish somebody had stopped and told me this was not sustainable.
The honesty around it in conversations can be, it can be tough, but it's way better to be honest and somewhat opinionated at times rather than fan the myth and the wishful thinking.
I agree. And I don't think our customers want myths and wishful thinking anymore. Mm. I think everybody's a bit sick of the hype. Most people can tell when they're being sold to.
Yeah.
And most of us fear coming across like a salesperson. So the discussion that we have about authenticity and vulnerability, they're not just buzzwords. It's actually what's needed. It doesn't mean that you wear your heart on your sleeve. It doesn't mean that you divulge your deepest, darkest secrets to a brand new client. But it does mean that you can turn around and say, you know what, I'm stuck. We've got to work this out together.
Yep. Need some external advice and external thinking on it. Let's go back to the coaching stuff, because you and I know what each of us does, but listeners may just be quite bewildered at this point. So I didn't realize you'd done some official ICF training and coach training. That makes us sisters, because I did that, and it was, I think, pretty much the most powerful professional and personal development I ever did. I've done today. There's other things that are also up there, but perhaps on different highways, if you like. But understanding the principles of coaching and the strategies and the systems that sit behind it are really, really important and are a really big part of certainly the very little clinical work I do, but also a really big part of the business coaching work that I do as well. How do you use those coaching principles?
Yep. Well, I think what I like to help people understand is I'm a rehabilitation counsellor by qualification, but I have, in my counselling background, I had not have knowledge of CBT and ACT and person-centred this and gestalt that and, you know. So another tool to my tool belt, my communication style, my helping you manage behaviour style is the skills that are associated with coaching. So I've fought for a really long time with the idea of being a business coach, because I felt that was really limiting. But I think we've got some jargon occurring, and I just needed to use the word because SEO needed me to use the word, to be honest. So I get really concerned that we've got people out there who think that lived experience is coaching, because it's just because you've done something once or you've had an experience of something doesn't make you a coach. And I can be opinionated and people are allowed to disagree with me, and I welcome that. But coaching has a skill set attached to it. It has a body of evidence attached to it, has ethics and professionalism attached to it. And I can assure you that the amount of practical work that you and I need to do to get our ICF certification is more than the clinical hours of a graduate rehabilitation counsellor.
Yep. My ICF initial coaching, I think, was 60, maybe 70 hours.
Yeah, that sounds right. 60, 70 hours. And then there's And then the next bit for us is to do all that practical work and submit. Yep,
that's hundreds of hours.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. So I think people need to understand that it is a unique skill set. Yes, the mechanism of it is a lot of questioning, but it's not a list of questions and you just get to choose a question. You've got to understand how you get a person from A to B, not just in terms of outcome, but in terms of thought process and where is that interruption occurring. And you do that by questioning, because if you did it by telling them what to do, that's not coaching.
No, that's consulting.
Consulting or advising or bossing people around. I can do that too if you want.
Oh, yeah, that's one of my forte. It first appeared on my grade 2 report in about 1972 or 71.
I'm very good at bossing people around, but you have to step back and go, what is the right thing for this person right now? So when business coaching clients or health practice coaching clients come to me in the initial stages, they're feeling really unsure of themselves. They're terrified because they've never spent this much money on their own development before. Yeah. Because it's more than $50, just putting it out there. And I have to hold the safe space for them. But so there's a little bit more advising going on in that space. But once they get their sort of sea legs back and they start to feel like they're on land again, the power of having a great coach or a really exceptional coach is to know when I stop holding so much of this and I start giving it back to you. So I've got an example of somebody at the moment who we're able to get her revenue to $250,000 a year, and she's really excited about that. But because there's a developmental stage that occurs now and we've got some recruitment to do, she keeps coming back to me going, what do I do next? What do I do next? What do I do next? And I have to resist the temptation to go do this, do this, do this, and go, hang on a minute, we've been here before. What are the similarities to the last time you felt overwhelmed in your business? You know, what is it that's going on for you right now? You don't need me to direct you. We need to draw back on what you've already learned about yourself, because you already know what to do here. Totally different conversation.
Yeah. What both of us have not managed to do in this conversation is point out the elephant in the room that you also work as an allied health business coach.
Oh, yeah, I do.
Yeah, that's relevant right now.
Oh, I just assumed everyone knew that. Sorry.
No.
I'm very passionate about it.
But winning friends and influencing people, we are. So you provide the rehab services. You have a team that delivers that, but you also do some really specialist business mentoring, business coaching, whatever. However we want to do it. And so I guess people are sort of thinking that, you and I are in the same market and could be described as competitors, but it's never had that feel about it at all.
You
and I can sit there with the mojito and kind of talk about the future of everything. So, and the reason of coming on the podcast was to talk about the value, to catch up with where our stuff's at, and also to talk about the value of coaching or mentoring or whatever you want to call it, it is you need to kind of be purchasing and applying to make your business fly.
Yeah, and be able to get the right advice at the right time. So one of my big things is that it feels like every day I wake up and there's a new private practice coach on the market who there's so much choice. When I started doing this work 8 years ago, I didn't realize that anyone else was doing it. I just had no clue. It was so far removed. I now realize that there are, and there were. I was just very insular.
I wish listeners could see you waving your arms around in the air saying that. Sorry. It's a growing thing.
It is. And it's not that we don't need, I'm not concerned by competing with anybody, because I'm not the best fit for everyone.
Oh, absolutely.
If you don't want to work hard, then you don't want to work with me. If you don't want to have times where you get uncomfortable, then you don't want to work with me. I'm not here to be your best friend. You don't need to pay money for a friend. I'm not here to be your friend. I'm here to help you achieve your goals and bust through the things that are causing you distress and difficulty. I take that really seriously. I'm sorry. Yes, simples. I just went a bit stunned, but that. So the competition thing, we can get caught up in that, but you know, seriously, how many graduates? Oh, where we see that every second person wants to open up an OT clinic or an exercise physiology clinic or a speech pathology clinic. It's like when you're driving down the car and you just bought driving down the road in your brand new red car, and you thought your brand new red car was. That's right. So of course, when you're going to start your own practice, all you see are the other practices that you then perceive are going to be competition. Sorry, you're just not that special.
Neither are you.
No. I'm glad you're laughing.
So I guess it's just something that the market will continue to mature. The more private practices, the more coaches, mentors, advisors, whatever are going to pop up. And I guess competition is nearly always good, keeps you on your game. You can be curious about what others are doing and what they're not doing and to what extent that aligns with you. But at the end of the day, only you and only I can do what we can do.
Oh, absolutely. I could help somebody with a pediatric practice, but I'd prefer them to come and speak to you.
Yeah, I refer clients to you.
It's like, please. It's like, I now have somebody in my world who knows this stuff inside. Oh, NDIS stuff. You need to just go talk to Kathy. So I got excited when I learned that you were building that body of knowledge, because it's like, oh, thank God I don't have to learn about it.
Oh, you tell me that now. It's a really complicated space. This podcast will be going out kind of pre-certification and pre all of this next phase. I've been interviewed just this morning for some thoughts on the NDIS and all that it is and all that it isn't. So, I will shoulder that for you, Jo. Just thank me later. I'll shoulder that for you.
We're starting to actually get quite a few inquiries from NDIS recipients asking us if we can support them. So it's probably something that I'm going to have to consider into the future. But it's
you're not registered yet.
No. I actually wanted them to go and sort the mess out, and then I'll work out how to do the registration.
Okay. I'm not sure how long you'll be waiting for that. Okay. All righty. So you're a trained coach, as am I. You've had the benefit of coaching. Can we just go back to those coaching conversations you've had as a coachee? And what's the benefit from it? What's really resonated? What difference has coaching, business mentoring made for you?
Oh, wow. Helping me get really clear about what it is I really want, because when we and at the expense of what else. So usually when you say to somebody, what do you want, the thing that comes out of their mouth is a very superficial, surface thing. I want freedom, I want flexibility, I want this, I want rainbow unicorns. And what coaching has helped me do is ask a better question, which is, why do you want those things? So I can tolerate a lot more financial risk in my business now, because my business creates cash for me to employ in wealth creation. But before I actually worked that out and had somebody help me work that out, if I went into my overdraft, and seriously, I need to have an overdraft, it's just the way the business of my size works, I would freak out. I would be in tears. I would feel like a failure. I would feel like that's it, we're going. So my thought pattern was, I'm going to be broke. I won't be able to feed my son anymore, and my husband will leave me, because that's how we catastrophize. That's, and I know money is a really big issue for a lot of us, so that's been really useful for me. The toughest coaching I've ever had to deal with was around me letting go of my clinical caseload. So my identity, my identity was wrapped up in being a clinician and being a rehab counselor and being a rehab counselor of the reputation that I have. And when it became painfully obvious that I can't manage a clinical load of 24 clients plus a team of, at that time, 10 plus a business plus my coaching clients, of which there were 10 as well, I had a coach she eyeballed me and she said, I won't work with you any longer until you start making choices about what you're not going to do anymore. Yeah. And I my personality style, I am much more motivated by a big stick than I am by a carrot. She poked me with a really
very
hot
sharp
stick. Yeah. So, but that was a 12-month process. Yes. So, it wasn't, but people go, well, just stop taking on clients. Yeah, right. So when someone calls up and goes, I need you to do this. You're the only person I know of who can do this. My God, my ego was like, of course you're right. I am the only person who can do this. Thank you so much for acknowledging me.
That clinical ego has got a lot to account for. Not just you, but me as well, and the report writing and the grandiose thinking and servicing. And anyway, continue with your story.
No, it took me 12 months to go from 24 to 5, and I'm staying on 5, although I have now been able to go, there's going to come a day when I don't have 5 clinical clients, when I actually have none. And the way I've been able to do it, my team was sitting there begging me for the opportunity for more work. Joe, please let us work with you. Please teach us how you do what you do. And I that's where my significance is now. It's not in the individual clients. It's like I can actually create people who can do this work really well. I don't want clones of me, but people who can do this work really well, and clients can get served and families can get repaired and people can earn money. And that's essentially, as health professionals, what we all want to do. None of us went to therapist school to learn how to write clinical notes.
No.
We all went to therapist school to help people.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm curious about whether I know the answer to this next question, but I want to hear it in your awesome words. As your clinical load went down, what happened to your business?
I don't know if I want to answer this. We'll just pretend it's a non-issue. I didn't plan for that transition particularly well financially. So okay. So when it was all about me and all about me running the business and doing all of the work, we had really high profitability. Profitability was running at about 40% per annum, which is huge. We had lots of money left over, and that was cool. I bought 2 investment properties because of that. I expected the revenue to stay the same because I expected the referral numbers to stay the same, and that kind of has happened. But then when you get other people to do the work for you, you have to pay them.
Yep. And there's more admin.
There's more infrastructure costs. There's more love, more demands on your time. So, yeah, I didn't plan for that very well, and I refuse to let any of my practice building clients go through the same thing now. So I have quite a strict analysis that we do and a projection that we do so that people don't, because that was heartbreaking. No, we didn't go bust. Nobody went bankrupt. My husband didn't leave me. My son still loves me, and we can all eat. But that's probably been, in the most recent years, the biggest personal, professional business development story.
Perfect storm. It's that perfect storm. But without George Clooney, it is the perfect storm. Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe it would have been better if he was around.
It could only have helped. I'm mindful of time, and I don't even know who's still listening at this point. But tell me what's in the tarot. What's in the future for the Purple Co?
What's in the future? Well, I am building systems and processes because that's what the business needs. That's not very sexy. I get that.
It's not.
I don't want to grow my team bigger than what it is. I want to really consolidate what we've got and how we do what we do. And we're not full, so I don't feel the need to grow. I also know that with more than 8 of us, then I'm going to need to employ a team leader type of person, and we just don't have the resources for that at the moment. I'm writing my first book, Kathy.
Oh, yes. I forgot to ask. What a interviewer I am. Tell us, has it got a title or anything sneaky?
It has a working title. And it's called The Entrepreneurial Clinician.
Ooh, very nice.
Thank
you. I must remember not to use that.
I must remember to go and trademark it.
Today would be the day.
Yeah,
wow.
Yeah. So it's it's not a how-to book. So there's so many practice building books, or how to start a private practice, how to build a private practice, all the steps and the tools and the templates. There's a lot of that on the market. Mm. What I think we need is somebody to help us think about why we're doing it and how we can do things differently. The market is asking us to do things differently. Our professional associations and our university institutions aren't keeping up with the way the market wants to consume health.
We're not keeping up.
So we can't wait for them. We actually need to take responsibility here. So there's discussion about what it is to be an entrepreneur and what it means to be a clinician and why the two things seem diametrically opposed to each other, but they actually are a really good fit.
Oh, they are so aligned. So aligned.
Yeah, so I'm hoping to launch. I've been asked to go to a retreat for mental health professionals in the US in Hawaii in January, and I'm looking forward to launching it then. So
perfect. Wow. Very cool.
Yeah.
So there's a lovely status of growth and stability and systemizing, and that's you've got to systemize. Occasionally you just got to press pause and shore it all up, steady it up, get your SOPs, because then you can make the next set of decisions, I guess, on scale or whatever. Mm. And you've got to book in your future as well. Very cool.
I'm one of those people that, like, I grew fast, but I didn't have enough. There wasn't enough solid ground underneath me. So I think that don't do what I did. That's not saying that fast growth is wrong. It's just you've got to make sure that you've got your foundations in place to support the growth.
Yep, that was my experience as well. And whilst you can recover, it's a lot of very, very fast and foreign learning in that fast growth bit.
Mm. It is. And then if you don't maintain, a lot of us, you know, we get addicted to that sense of success and progress, and we then set really big, audacious, ambitious goals. And then it's taking me 3 years to achieve a goal that I set 3 years ago. I'm not used to that. I'm used to overachieving in 6 months. Yep. So it's not just me launching forward now. I've got to bring this behemoth thing along with me. So I need, it's a lot of energy to take a step forward.
And to stay there.
Yeah, the way I like to explain is, you know, a colander, like where we drain food through a colander. So I grew my business by sticking Band-Aids all over the holes.
Oh, wow. Got it.
So when you pull one Band-Aid off, like 7 holes get uncovered.
Yep.
So but I do think that there's an element of that needing to happen. I think you can't have everything streamlined and systematized and programmed. Otherwise you'll miss opportunities in the market. Yeah. But I think we need to be wiser, and we can have decision-making frameworks in place, which I know is something you're very good at, is helping people know when to make a next decision and how you're going to make that decision and what criteria is required for that decision. Well, I don't know if you know you're good at it. That's how you help me.
Thank you. I'm thinking of that beautiful book, The Decision-Making Book. Have you got that one?
Yes, I have, on your recommendation.
Yeah, that's great. I'm looking, turning to make sure it's still on my bookshelf. It's the one that I often loan out, but then I get all panicky that I don't know where it is. I think I've bought about 3 copies of it in the last year. All righty. Wow. So just absolutely gorgeous to catch up with you. I offer all of my podcast guests the chance to ask me a question.
Hmm. You do. Okay. So, Kathy, what I would like to know is, if you weren't doing what you do today, what would you be doing instead?
Whoa. I don't know. There's so many things that tick around. I mean, imagine if I had to choose one. If I wasn't doing what I do today, I would, I don't know. So many things are bubbled up. travel is the one that is just shouting the loudest. But I guess within that travel, there would be purpose. I'm not sort of the aimless meanderer type. That isn't relaxing for me. I would be looking at going to places where I might dabble and poke my nose in some projects. I would be visiting every art gallery under the big blue skies. I would be wanting to kind of just find out stories, whether it's business stories or life stories or stories of kids or families or women in different environments and circumstances. I guess I could sum it up by saying I'm very happy to talk and eat my way around the planet, stopping at galleries and making a difference where I could.
Oh, nice. Thank you for sharing. I think we all fantasize about an alternative career path, and sometimes it's nice to be able to express it.
Yeah. I don't know if that'll ever happen, though. Bits of it might, but perhaps not all in one big hit. We shall see. Never
we
seen
shall.
Now. Alrighty, awesome, Joe. Really great to have you on the podcast. What we might do, what we will do, is we'll get you back closer to the book.
Oh, thank you.
Then you can give us the secret sauce on the book and tell us about the chapters and all the rest of it. And, yeah, hey. Sounds really cool. I'd love to get my mitts on one when they're running off the press. Are they going to be purple?
I haven't decided yet.
But oh, yes, that's, you
have. There will have to be some purple in it somewhere, yes.
There will. Thank you so much. Thank you. Good luck with the book writing, and we'll connect later in the year when the book's kind of, good to go.
Wonderful. Thanks, Kathy, and thank you for the contributions you make to this community. I really appreciate your podcast.
Oh, pleasure, pleasure. See ya.
Bye.
Thank you for investing your time right through to the end of this episode of Private Practice Secrets. If you're running a private practice and keen for more business confidence and management know-how, head on over to our website, nacre.com.au. I'll spell it, nacre.com.au. Over there, you'll find all sorts of business resources and inspiration, blogs, forms, web events, freebies, our virtual conference information, workshops, and more. And don't be shy. Take advantage of the free power call and book yourself into my diary for the chance to have a business chat and to pick my brains. I'm Kathy Love, Allied Health Business Coach, wishing you and your business a brilliant day.